Hey everyone, I'm your host Tom Shaughnessy and welcome back to Chain Reaction, a research-driven podcast that's a part of Delphi Digital. If you're not on Delphi's research portal, you're missing out on the critical analysis read by the top minds in the crypto space, so be sure to check it out. One quick housekeeping item, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. I may personally hold tokens mentioned on the podcast, and you can view our show notes below for our complete disclosures. With that, let's jump into the episode. Hey everyone, I wanted to tell you about our new podcast sponsor, LVL. LVL is releasing the first free Bitcoin exchange in North America. The LVL mobile app allows you to buy and sell Bitcoin with no trading fees or hidden spreads. With LVL, you get free Bitcoin trading, a hosted Bitcoin wallet, an FDIC-insured personal checking account, wires, checks, and direct deposits, and even a MasterCard debit card. If you use their premium account for $9 a month, you get autopilot automatic trading, chat with a dedicated private banker, and even a metal MasterCard. Check them out at lvl.co or check them out in the show notes below. Now back to our show. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Delphi podcast. I'm Tom Shaughnessy, host of the Chain Reaction segment. Today I have on Leo from Cream. Leo, how's it going?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Leo, we covered you, I think, late summer in a quick daily on covering Cream Finance. It's been a long time coming, man.
Yeah, definitely.
And to have you on. So tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, so my background is mostly around technology management. I think way back from started in hardware stuff, but that's less important. And then when I got into cloud computing in San Francisco, I was at a company called Solano Labs, where we hosted Coinbase's private CI/CD system. So their software integration deployment system, software QA, basically. And that's where I learned about some of the crypto stuff. And then been on this journey since 2017. It's been a lot of fun. And I'm proud to be sporting my Meta Cartel jacket. Meta Factory,
I love your jacket, man. So I got my Wi-Fi sweatshirt on. Show me that jacket. Yeah. That's sick.
So yeah, there's a little robot here. Shout out to Drew and the Meta Factory crew for making some awesome dank swag.
I love that, man. That's pretty cool. Yeah, so it's cool you got started. You're in Meta Cartel Ventures. You're in the Lao. So you're in a bunch. So, and then just give us the quick download on Cream Finance for those who might not be following.
Yeah, so Cream Finance, we started in August as a lending platform. So really, I think the vision there was, hey, look, let's do something cool in DeFi. There's a real need here. It was really, the roadmap has been always kind of user need generated, right? From that standpoint of we have been degen farming and we've been looking at different things and we think, hey, what can we build? What's needed? And it's like, you know, it'd be really cool if we could borrow these seed tokens. So, and I think we were big fans of what Compound has done. It's like, hey, let's fork their code and give it a go. And from there, we've been meaning to build and we continue to build useful money Legos.
That's awesome. So you guys originally forked Compound for borrowing and lending. You later forked Balancer for the swap platform. You guys were moving, and you still are moving, like really fast on the integrations. Yep. I remember like doing that initial node on you guys, it was hard to keep up. How do you keep that cadence, right? Like it's very hard to keep that level of speed. Like it's all fun at the beginning and then you start to build a project and it all gets layered on. Are you guys still keeping that type of speed on the innovation cycle?
Yeah, I think so. I think it goes back to building useful money Legos by watching user behavior and not just watching user behavior like we take, you know, market studies, things of that nature. It's more like we are in it ourselves. So we're out there farming, we're out there participating, which is why we think, you know, it'd be really cool to put Keeper in here and Bond. And we're looking at DOE and some of the other tokens as well that makes sense. I think the pace of innovation in some ways is tied to market, right? The brief bit of chilling out and like the somewhat medium term bear market allowed us to sort of take care of some technical debt on the back end, some things we've meaning to do. I spent some more time on the governance piece, sprucing that piece up. And that I think continues to be the focus. Look at what's useful, build useful money Legos. And recently with our merger into the Wi-Fi ecosystem, I actually think that the speed of innovation should be picking up.
That's a good point. I can't wait to get there. And just to dive in first though on the
the borrowing and lending space. So Compound, obviously, extremely well known. Aave is extremely well known. That's his balancer. How do you guys differentiate versus Compound and Aave? I mean, my understanding was that you guys were listing kind of the long tail assets and you listed very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we sat down and thought about how we can be a relevant player within the space, we also looked at the advantage here being out in Taipei. And and the reason I moved from San Francisco to Taipei, by the way, was because of the fact that there was a lack of regulatory clarity that continues to hurt us as an industry as a whole. And that's not what we're here to talk about. But I know that
could be a whole other pod.
That would be a whole other pod. In fact, I did at Consensus New York last year. Did mention to Hester Pierce when she was, I attacked her. It's not that she's like a good friend of mine. That's what I'm trying to say. But I talked to her after her speaking engagement. I said, look, you know, it would be really cool if folks like me can not have to leave the country to do what we want to do. And but anyway, yeah. So I moved to Taiwan here to pursue more crypto because it's just the regulatory lack of certainty caused a lot of legal bills, and they didn't want to quite deal with that because even then you pay the legal bills. And they're great people, the folks we work with, but it's just you're still not clear as to what you can and can't do. So back to the strategy and differentiation standpoint, we've taken on quite simply more like a Binance to Coinbase type approach. That is to say, folks like Aave and more true to Compound, I think, as the UK, is, I think, in my understanding, is a bit better about the regulatory clarity. But still, the UK and the US have more stringent regulatory requirements, which allows us to move faster in a jurisdiction like Taiwan. So I think that is the main differentiation. As we continue to go list that long tail of tokens, you know, we jokingly said it was quite of a YOLO approach to begin with. And then as we start looking at kind of credit analysis, we're certainly sitting down to tighten up our list of assets as the current priority.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I mean, so you guys, I mean, like Compound has 9 assets listed. Obviously, they have a ton of liquidity, stuff like that. You guys have, looks like, dozens of assets listed.
Yeah, 30 plus.
Yeah, 30 plus. I mean, that's definitely a differentiator. I mean, what are your concerns, though, with listing long tail of assets? Like, I mean, are there attack vectors where people deposit assets that, you know, might not be that valuable and then borrow against it? Like, how do you, it just seems like a lot of the risk gets multiplied as you start introducing more and more assets, right?
Yeah, definitely. The platform is only as like the as strong as its weakest asset. You know, the chain is as strong as its weakest link, sort of thing. Rings true here because if you have a asset that's the attack vectors may be infinite minting, it may be some kind of market manipulation, maybe an Oracle attack, but roughly you have, you know, asset A in there that's not worth money, and then asset B taken out that's worth money. It's like USDC or ETH or something gets taken out, and then you just sort of take that money out of the address, the system allows you to do so when it's rightfully collateralized. But then if you kind of plan on destroying the value of that token anyway, then you might as well pump it all the way up, take out all the tokens, and then send it out of that wallet where it can't be liquidated, or where it can't be, you know, where it's nothing to do with that wallet. Where liquidation actually occurs on the asset itself, but that you deposit the collateral, but still you could take the money out and then never come back. But that is a concern. And I think this is where governance is at odds with this, right? So if you have someone who, on one hand, if you theoretically own a large enough of votes to sway a certain decision, you shouldn't be doing things that hurt the system. On the other hand, I don't know, not everybody's rational, I suppose, in the overall scheme of things. So it's quite possible that it's really hard balance between making sure you have a very thoughtful, quantitative, numbers-based analysis on credit, and then weigh that against community governance vote. I mean, there's a right answer, and community governance vote isn't going to most likely get you the right quantitative answer on credit risk.
So that's a really good point. I guess if you're thinking ahead, you know, a couple months, couple of years, do you think that the decisions around collateral, what assets to list, things like that, that, you know, have serious effects on the platform, do you think that's going to be decided by, you know, A, the larger community, which I doubt, or two, maybe a smaller subset, like a silo of, you know, 10 smart people, or three, do you think eventually we might get to a way where it's just all algorithmic, you know, maybe the AMM prices this or something like that?
Yeah, we talked about some combination of that. There are a few solutions we're working at here. So, you know, when we think about traditional finance and how the world works today, in the majority, you know, the Federal Reserve isn't a democratic thing. You don't get to vote on the interest rate because that would be a very bad idea. So arguably,
it's a good comparison.
Yeah, I mean, arguably, maybe it's still swayed by popular vote, popular opinion, etc. But you know, by design, you should put in a bunch of smart quantitative people who understand economics and let them make those decisions. Now, again, that's at odds against the governance structure. But you mentioned quite a few things there. So, do we have a council of smart people to make decisions? Maybe. We've got a group of very smart people who evaluate credit now that have given us some opinions on what we should do. That's one thing. The second thing is the technical aspects of thing. You mentioned the third option, a more algorithmically driven type of outcome. That is directionally more of what we're trying to go to, is just, you know, here's some hard metrics, here's some hard numbers. Therefore, it's not going to be a group of really smart people. It's not going to be a governance vote, so we can more or less hide behind the process and say, look, this is what's kind of programmatically the best answer. So the current solutions in place include the isolated pairs. So in that example I provided, where you have you can have like some worthless asset take away some valuable asset. Well, if you isolate the pairs at that point, it looks more like trading pairs. It's a bit like the bento box concept that Sushi was talking about. It is that, actually. So that it allows you to basically say, well, if you're only collateralizing ETH and you're taking out USDC, then that's the only risk you're taking. At that point, then I think those supplying assets are less at risk, and the risk goes down, and the survivability of the program goes up. Another idea we've talked about, which we haven't quite implemented, and it may not be as good as the current options, would be the idea of providing some kind of collateralized position. So say if, you know, Tom, you have a Tom coin or a Delphi coin wants to jump on, and it's like, hey, look, you guys don't have any on-chain liquidity. It's like, oh, what if you put in some level of, say, a Sushi LP, and then you stake that LP, and then your collateral factor roughly dynamically adjusts according to your collateral that allows people to liquidate into. And as soon as you pull that collateral out or pull that stake out, perhaps then you should lose your collateral factor. But there are a few different things we could do programmatically to ensure safety.
That's awesome. Yeah, it sounds like directionally the community could play a good role in deciding which assets to list, because the community at large kind of knows what assets are a joke. And then if it's programmatic on determining the risk factors and the credit, the collateral, and things like that, it really helps you guys scale, especially with the number of assets you have.
Right, definitely.
And Leo, just walk me through, before we get into the Yearn partnership, talk me through kind of just the cadence on your product roadmap, right? Because you have a lot of assets listed. You launched your swap platform, you launched ETH2 staking and lending. Kind of just walk me through, you know, those products, how they did, and what else is on the roadmap there.
Yeah, so along the line of useful money Legos, as we get more degen into our own farming, we think, hey, look, you know, at some point, let me try to think back in time in terms of, so we launched on August 3rd, and, you know, we initially were like, look, these Yearn guys are up to something awesome. This Wi-Fi thing is pretty awesome. We're farming Wi-Fi. Why don't we go ahead and just put that on our platform, make it accessible? And then we think, hey, this Y-curve thing, YCRV is pretty awesome. And then it's like, hey, then this Y-vault thing with YCRV thing is pretty awesome. Like, why should the degen end right there? Like, why can't LP tokens be an asset? Because we know that they're worthwhile, and we know that people have them, and we know that people want to borrow them. So let's list them. So we did that, like, all right, YCRV, and then it became YYCRV. And then, yeah, and it is like, look, where does this kind of inception end, right? Like, well, the answer is it ends when the risk becomes unbearably high. But at this point, we thought that, you know, it makes sense. Peeps, and you know, from a farming standpoint too, it also allows, between listing of YCRV and the other governance tokens, seed tokens, I guess people are calling it less now, but back then when these were the things that go in the YAM and farm the other things, they allowed what happens would be a different appetite for risk, right? So you have people who want a degen who says, you know, I don't want to long these tokens, these seed tokens. I don't believe in any of the seed tokens, even though they're credible. I love, like, Aave, for example, Lend. Like, that's a totally credible coin. But for whatever reason, it is, you're long ETH, you're long BTC, you don't want to touch those coins, but you still want to farm. You could deposit your BTC, your ETH, and then you can borrow it to farm. So that was kind of the thinking around that. So you allow people who farm to have a cost of capital that's decent. I mean, it's still positive. And a lot of people who don't want to farm to be like, no, I don't want to touch that. I don't want to manage the gas. I only, whatever reason it is, I stick it on cream and I earn that return. But it's actually juiced by the fact that the farming opportunities are there. So it kind of allows for tranche risk almost. So, and then from there, we thought, hey, you know, it'd be really cool if we had our own swap product. Everybody's doing it kind of like, let's give it a shake. And so we looked at our favorite AMM product, which is Balancer. Ingenious design. I think there's so much there in Balancer that's probably worth another podcast itself to discuss. The thing is awesome. And then we tried that bit. And then honestly, the field is a lot more competitive in the AMM market from a regular asset, like as a not stable coin. So we tried that. It didn't quite work very well. And given the current year in partnership, we're going to not focus on that product. And then we also, you know, Andre's always been a fan of consolidated liquidities. That's where this creamy product came across, where we thought, hey, look, if we can consolidate all liquidity, make it dynamic, you can adjust tokens because there's seemingly always new relevant stable coins coming in. And so we wanted to build a creamy product. The creamy product was hit about $70-80 million TVL and then dropped off. So while by design is a fairly cool design, you know, the Curve team over there certainly has a lot going on there that frankly we can't beat on that field. So we're focusing now purely on lending. But the ETH2 thing as well is we're talking about how I want to put money in ETH2. And I think, gee, why do I want it to be stuck for a year and a half or three or however long it takes? Why can't I again use that as collateral? So we decided, yeah, man, let's just put ETH2, let's just do our own ETH2 validator nodes and then let's add it on as a collateral, because from a strategy standpoint, it's a lot easier for us with a lending platform to run a validator nodes and then put that asset on our platform than for folks running validator nodes to spin up their own lending platform. So from a strategy standpoint, it was much more defensible. It was based on our lending platform, and going forward, all of our products will be basically leveraging the fact that we have this very strong lending platform.
Lots to unpack there, Leo. So I got a couple follow-up questions. I guess my first one is just going back to the borrowing and lending product you guys have. Early on, you guys were pretty aggressive in incentivizing a lot of those assets. So, you know, come deposit XYZ asset, we're going to give you an APY, but we're also going to give you some cream token rewards. You guys are really aggressive and very transparent on your Medium about what rewards you were giving each pool. I think it was on a weekly basis.
Yes.
How did you guys back into that art form of, you know, we want to incentivize these pairs, but we also don't want our token to become valueless by giving away too much of it?
Yeah. So the whole thing was orchestrated with just a lot of spreadsheeting and making sure that we validate. Basically, looking back, not that we're kind of building the system as we go, but roughly the criteria went as such. One, we need to make sure that the APY is relevant at two, the target TVL. So we look at what's relevant now, what's reasonable. So, you know, you back into the actual number of cream based on a certain cream token price, and then you can then figure out what your APY is, which is how we're able to predictively say, well, you know, you don't just blindly say, 1,000, let's go. Like, no, it's more like we want an X TVL with the Y cream price and the result of the Z APY because YAM is currently at 2,000 because Sushi is now at a 1,500 or whatever it is. So we want it to be relevant, and which is also why we did the 1 week thing. And, you know, some people complain and said, hey, you guys changed too quickly. And I think, I don't know about you, but, you know, back in the DeFi summer in August, September, I would wake up and go, shouldn't have been sleeping because now I just missed this other thing that. So, right. So it's like, you're complaining to me that 7 day iterations are too fast. Like, come on, that is not the way these things work. Anyway. So we also think about its impact on the token dilution, because we know that these tokens are very, very dear to the system, and we're not just going to, you know, hand them out and make it rain. So we were very cognizant of the kind of how much we're giving out vis-a-vis the total market cap and the diluted market cap. And we wanted to make sure that the growth was healthy so that we didn't have this reckless spending of tokens in a way that didn't drive us good value. Now, there were some campaigns that we did, like in retrospect, it created some unintended outcomes that we didn't like. And the most immediate one off the top of my head, I just want to be transparent to everybody out there. Like, the biggest mistake we made, I think, was incentivizing the CR ETH borrowing, because that basically created this kind of incentive to short, which is exactly not what you want. But I think as we move very quickly in experimenting with DeFi and rewards, these are kind of the approaches and what we learned.
So Leah, the other question I had for you is, so you went through all of the products you guys launched in your question ago. The funny part about that is you guys have done all of that in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, which is just wild. How do you keep the cadence, keep the morale up, keep innovating and breaking things when you have to launch projects that literally fail in a week or two and just keep going? Like, it seems like it's hard to wake up every day and just keep going. How do you keep the morale up?
Well, if you don't sleep, then you have to wake up every day and deal with that problem.
That's a good
just
point.
Kidding. No. I think we all burned really, really hard during that DeFi summer, and we were able to take a break during the bull market. So in some ways, the bear market was a welcoming break. Like, we can finally breathe now that nobody's really kind of like saying,
bear market was only a couple of weeks too.
yeah. Let's see what happens, because it seems like my sleep is definitely inversely correlated with ETH and Bitcoin price. But look, I think that's a very good question. I think that's a very tough one. And I'll start with the team. We have a team of very talented developers that I keep telling them, like, you guys think of some really awesome things and you're really smart that you need to get on Twitter and start talking more. And some of the devs have, and I encourage them to do that, because I think Taiwan is, I keep becoming like a shill for Taiwan, but I think for good reasons. Like, I think, there are a lot of talented developers here. Some of the folks previously worked with Ethereum Foundation. Ethereum Foundation has a presence here. So there's a very talented pool of developers here that can, in fact, pound out this code quickly. In some of the prior projects I've worked with, we tried to, organizational behavior standpoint, bring in developers who are smart, but they're not blockchain developers. They're not passionate blockchain people. This time around, what we've brought in are developers who are smart, capable, top of their class from the top universities, as well as at the time when we poached them, had jobs in blockchain companies here in Taipei. And so I think the passion with the team, coupled with a strong experience, great Solidity devs. And then we also luckily had some, advising, mentoring coverage from Andre, which I guess is a good segue into the YFI piece. But we've always been talking about, ever since integrating the YEARN tokens, Andre's been a big part of kind of helping us out here and there. We're very fortunate to have him along for the ride. But along with that point, I should also mention that the folks at Compound as well, early on, Rob and the team at Compound Labs have been fantastic advisors and mentors to us. And kind of a little known fact is these folks own, at this time, 7.7% when we did the math last of Cream tokens, and they're on their way to owning probably 10% or so. That's an estimate based on what they put into the long-term staking pool. So we've had a lot of help along the way. We're very lucky to have that.
Yeah. Wow. No, I give you guys a lot of credit, and a lot of credit to Rob and the Compound team for, being open to, frankly, competitive versions of their code. But yes, it's great that I think they want to see innovation. I think you guys did right by working closely with them and offering the token. So that was interesting. And Leo, one last question before we get into Yearn, because I want to spend a lot of time on Yearn. You guys also have lending available on Binance Smart Chain. Can you quickly, I know it's a long question, but can you quickly just tell us about how that works and more about cross-chain DeFi?
Yeah, I actually think that this piece is often missed by, unfortunately, the Ethereum maximalism that happens on crypto Twitter. And a lot of people shut it off. But, ultimately, for DeFi to succeed, it shouldn't be just let's all do Ethereum, even though that's where it started and that's where a lot of folks got their starts from. And we love Ethereum, but still, let's be real here that it's about any layer one that has significant activity with significant assets, right? And that certainly squarely pegs Ethereum as a number one chain. But then the interesting question to ask is, okay, well then who else is out there with significant activity and significant assets? It's Binance Smart Chain. We've looked hard across the other chains that have other tokens. It's Binance Smart Chain that has the activity, the assets. Now, there's some criticisms, they're centralized, blah, 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 this and that. But at the same time, you know, I think earlier we were talking, Tom, much like some of the other criticism for other crypto parties, like they're not going to go rug X amount, like the Dr. Evil scene that went like, you know, $1 million. It's like, we make more than that. And no, they're not going to rug you for whatever's on that asset chain right now. And plus it's actually, their path to decentralization is fairly, I think, interesting so far, and they're moving toward that direction. But from the product standpoint, I feel like it's actually really easy to use. You know, I just go to my MetaMask and I click, I did demo for one time recently, and I just switched my MetaMask RPC from Ethereum mainnet to BSC. And then if your website is on app.cream.finance, as soon as you switch that over, it flips the front end into the set of BSC tokens. And then, you know, the 1 to 2 second block time, and, you know, we're looking at like, you know, to call it 2 to 10 cents for transactions rather than like $1 to $10-$20, depending on gas fees, right? So the speed is there. And the only problem is that there's not enough assets there, and there's less trust on there than Ethereum. But when you think about it from a systemic risk standpoint, I can't say for sure that, you know, the decentralization aspects are not as a risk, but I'll tell you that at least from a system robustness, that liquidation standpoint, because liquidations are so fast because of the block time and because it's so cheap, we've got like a handful of people who are liquidating so quickly on BSC because it's just cheap and fast, and you don't need to consider like, am I going to be profitable on this liquidation because it is so cheap and fast. So I think it's worth looking at, and I think that that ecosystem is a very good alternative to folks who just don't have the bankroll to be paying, you know, $1 to $20 per transaction.
Leo, you're saying that people who aren't rich should be in crypto, man? Come on. No, I'm with you. I mean, we have
banking
to
open the unbanked.
Yeah, we have to. No, I'm with you, man. I'll never be a maximalist. I talk about other chains all the time, and I think Ethereum's going to win, frankly. But to, you know, there's different design space on different chains. There's no reason not to open it. And for you guys, I mean, why not? It's more lending and borrowing for your platform at the end of the day. So Leo, just to, you know, elephant in the room is your merger, I'd say partnership with Yearn. Can you walk us through that? Because that's super interesting. I mean, Yearn's been on a rampage, you know, merging, partnering with companies. I've probably been a little outspoken. I think they're all partnerships at the end of the day, but I think it's great to move the space forward. And I really want to hear, you know, what you guys are doing together.
Yeah, I think starting with a little bit of background and history is helpful. So much like Robert and team being super DeFi friendly and not in a very super competitive way, like traditional industries seem to be, I am constantly reminded and impressed by the amount of collaboration that happens on DeFi. And it makes me happy, just like, you know, we're not at each other's throats because it's not useful, because we're the same, call it 5,000 to 20,000 people, whatever the number you want to peg it at, users. And we need to grow the pie for everybody. Now, Andre, I have a lot of respect for the guy, totally thinks this way. You know, when we were working on, I don't know if you call the Farm incident, where Farm had some trouble pulling ETH out of Cream and their strategy and was failing. And then people were freaking out because, you know, you put X ETH in and you expect to get like some percentage of ETH return back. You ended up with less than your X ETH. And that created a big problem. And as soon as that happened, you know, Andre was right there jumping in. And I'm thinking to myself, like, why are you helping these guys that copy your thing? And, you know, why? And I asked him that, and his answer to me, which was like, wow, you know, we should all think this way, is like, look, there are LPs that have money at stake and they're losing money. So I'm not going to care like what, like who these people are, or if they're competitive to me. All I care about is people in DeFi need to use this safely, and that LPs need to not lose money. People need to not lose money. So we should all think in that direction. And I think that when he jumped in, and basically he and I and the lead developer, Jeremy at Cream here, jumped in, found solutions. We handed it over to the Farm devs, and then they were able to implement a fix. And that to me, you know, is awesome. It's kind of like the pickle thing. It's like, anyway, so that was kind of, that was one part. And then when we started talking about Creamy as well, you know, Andre is right there. He's a great prototyper, and he handed this thing over, and our devs were looking at it thinking, all right, great. That's a great start. Let's now hammer out the rest. And from there, we kind of had a sense that it was a good partnership, because Andre had great ideas and our team was very meticulous. And the combination of the two allows for, you know, hammering out bugs and details, implementing in a useful way. So it was clear to us that we should continue to work together. But what the format was, you know, I guess that was never really finalized. So when this opportunity came for us to have this this merger, we talked about it one day, and then the next day we talked about some more details, and then the third day we launched the announcement. So I'm sure folks out there are wondering, like, hey, look, how long did it take? What was the process, et cetera? There's no application or anything like that necessarily. It was more like, look, you've been working together. I think if we look at it from a traditional lens, it's like when two organizations form a joint venture, and then subsequent to a successful joint venture, the companies merge. That part about the term merger versus partnership, also, I think you've seen my thread on the DeFi Voltron concept. And I think the point to emphasize there was that right after we made that announcement, it wasn't about like, let's send in, you know, Anderson Consulting and let's reconcile your Oracle versus my SAP backend first. And let's figure out our dev environment, like what kind of CI system are you using, which cloud are you using? Do we need to migrate from AWS or from your data center? Like none of that happened, because smart contracts simply talk to smart contracts and they don't care who built them as long as they can talk to and work with each other. So I think that that thing happened and the integration happened very quickly, and that we've already launched a prototype that is on chain now. We haven't really announced it yet, but I can get into the products later.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Andre. He's absolutely incredible. Definitely one of my idols. I love him, and extremely humanistic. He's just here to help people. I love that. I guess just on the merger partnership details here, what exactly are you guys specifically working with Yearn on? Like, can you talk a little bit about, you know, Cream V2 and kind of the lending protocol and like what that product looked like and kind of how it integrates with Yearn?
Yeah. So the bigger vision at Yearn now is focusing on the machine to machine, focused on the protocol, the automation piece. And I think my own opinion on that is actually it's a very smart strategy, because the ability to eliminate middlemen in smart contracts is something that you can extract if we focused purely on how to be really good and efficient and safe at the machine-to-machine interactions. So as part of the Yearn ecosystem, what we're focusing on is the lending portion. So we are the lending platform liquidity pool for the Yearn ecosystem and hopefully the greater DeFi ecosystem. So Cream V2 that we're working on now, I think, has a few things coming. One, the asset list. So our cobbled together, very aggressive asset list is now, so we'll call it that. That's the V1, right? The thing that's on Cream Finance One. That one is more like a B tranche credit risk pool. And Cream V2 is really going to take from that a very clean vetted list of DeFi blue chips. So all the vetting of the credit risk, et cetera, is going to result in a list of vetted tokens that everybody can agree on. Like, yeah, this is the list that we believe is creditworthy. And that one's going to be on the Yearn Finance page. So the vision now is that V2 is going to be on the Yearn Finance page. Cream V1 will continue to live onto the Cream Finance site. And effectively, while they're both maintained by the same team, this allows us to have the V1 as like a B tranche debt and then the V2 as a AA, AAA DeFi blue chip debt level. Beyond that, we also have this idea of, on the theme of machine-to-machine type lending, it's more like, if I were to think of it as enterprise lending. So while Aave and Compound and Cream V1 continues to serve the top of the end users, the Cream V2 will serve as the underlayer of liquidity for these lending platforms, as well as other leverage platforms, et cetera, working with. And I'm calling it the Iron Bank for now. I think that name might stick because if you're a fan of Game of Thrones.
Love the Game of Thrones reference.
Yeah. So that part will become, we're going to focus on the enterprise layer of the machine-to-machine and less so the peer-to-peer, so that the consolidated liquidity benefits will continue.
Leo, just to dig in there, and I think that's an awesome analogy. What exactly does that mean from like looking into this? Like, does that mean that you guys, like the Yearn vaults, like the strategies can get access to leverage through Cream? I read that on your Medium post. Is that kind of what you're describing here, where it's not users doing anything? It's just the protocol to protocol accessing that leverage if they need things like that?
So V2 then will still have a we'll call it a consumer front end that you can still, as a user, Tom, you can still individually go in with your smart contract and interact and deposit from and borrow from there, as well as from a protocol level, the Yearn vault can go and put money in there And then as well as I mentioned, any other DeFi protocol that we've whitelisted. So ironically, this thing has to start with some level of trustedness, but it basically means that the team has vetted the contracts, audited, if you will, the ability for that other side to safely deploy our money. So when we talk about the zero collateral protocol loan concept or the Iron Bank, it's not that the Iron Bank doesn't assess you for creditworthiness. It's more like the Iron Bank doesn't say you need to deposit with us now to get something. Because when you think about it, if you were to even just within Cream V1, let's just back away from the entire ecosystem. Let's go back to Cream V1. If you as a user, Tom, put some ETH in and you're just earning your interest or supply fees. And then me, I do the same thing, but then I'm borrowing from you. All it is that one smart contract checks with the other and says, hey, is this party creditworthy? And if so, let's let the money move. If not, don't. That's all it does. So if now we extend this thing, instead of if we chop it up and say, all right, there are two parties within the Cream system that's now doing this. If we chop it up and say, okay, well, now this party is outside of the Cream ecosystem. Again, the smart contracts don't care. And as long as we tell the smart contracts, you can now trust this one that's, you know, within the trusted parties the same way that Cream trusts one other Cream contract. That's all it is. So back to the integration thing, you know, this doesn't require like a bunch of lining up with the machines and software version, what have you. It's just that the protocols need to be whitelisted. That's it.
No, it's good analogies. It's great depth. And Leo, I have you, so I might as well ask like a hard question because you're here. I mean, sure. What exactly does the partnership bring you that you couldn't do on your own, right? Because like Yearn could always access leverage through Cream V1, right? So like, what are you getting? What are they getting that you didn't get before? Is it just time to market? Is it development resources? Is it, you know, working closer together? Like what exactly is the secret sauce of these partnerships?
It's actually all of those. So to give you a bit more insight, the day after that, well, it's not even the day. I mean, I'm talking about like minutes after that Medium post went out. We were all added into this these Telegram channels that the Yearn team works on. So we got dropped in, and you know, like the crew of Sam and Bantag and et cetera, known characters within the Yearn ecosystem are like, hey, welcome Cream team. Like that was it. And then we just jumped in.
I love their ecosystem.
And, yeah. And you know, it's like, I know it's like awesome. I'm dealing with this rabbit guy. Anyway, and they're very smart, capable people, and they work all the time. They work hard and they ask each other intellectually stimulating questions. And once in a while they talk about some interesting other DeFi trends and DeGen things, but they're very smart, and it makes me wish I could read Solidity better. But so when we got integrated in, the advantage is that we have their trust that they go, okay, we're not deploying anything until we vet your thing. And they're like, okay, great. From a standpoint, it's like, okay, look, what do you want? Like, let's do this. And you know, they're very transparent with us and said, look, we have these strategies set for Cream, but we were afraid to deploy them. There was some FUD going on about this stuff, and there's always FUD. But like, okay, well, then how do we fix this? So there's the direction of like, we need X, Y, and Z before we could trust you with our money. Great, sound, check that, let's go. What do we need to change? Let's go through those changes. Let's deploy these changes. Now put your money in because we've done the things that you've talked about. But it's not like put your money in with me, with us. It's put your money in with us, the greater Yearn ecosystem. Now it's like we're pulled in to the trusted circle quickly. And we're pulled in with the resources and the smart contract diligence that comes with the Yearn brand, if you will, the trust in the ecosystem, because they have very capable, we now have very capable developers. And if we did this structured as a, we'll call it a partnership, without dropping into their core channels, without, so I'm talking to what would traditionally be like some point of contact, some BD person, that's not the same as like the dev talking to dev saying, this is what we need. Let's make this happen. And then we make the changes and we go, great. Now we can deploy these strategies. Now we can put money in your smart contracts. Now we have all these things happening. So what they bring is the deeper integration allows us to build the trust by way of curing any faults that they see directly, right? So it's not just a, don't worry about it, it's cool, trust me. It's more like we fix these things, we change these things, and now you can trust us. And they do. It's the brand, of course, it's the coverage, it's the big brainness of that team plus Andre on what the latest things we should build are. And that combination will allow us to move super quick. And you know, that's something that I think we've been missing, that you couldn't do through partnerships.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the trust aspect. It's kind of funny. You automatically, you know, everyone just knows like, oh, they trust each other now. But the reality is you can move so much faster. Like there's no more mental steps on, you know, do we trust Cream anymore? Because, hey, we have them to chat. Let's ask them. Let's deploy this project in 2 hours instead of, you know, 2 weeks or 2 months. And that's powerful. And Leo, one other question for you there. Just obviously we run a venture fund. We're investors in this space. I think that these partnerships are amazing, right? Like you move DeFi, the entire pie, so much larger. The time to market comes down. You guys fill gaps in each other's products. Makes a ton of sense, especially from liquidity perspective. But investors, people, you know, none of this is investment advice, but what people look for is they want to know which tokens are going to accrue more value, right? It's all comparison. Everyone's comparing things all the time. How do you think about value accrual of the individual tokens within Yearn versus kind of Yearn itself? Or are you guys just so busy that this really doesn't matter right now?
I think it's actually the latter. We're so busy integrating that we're going to figure out the token things later, kind of. But I know that sounds to a lot of traditional finance people like, hey, you guys are very irresponsible. How could you then merge these things together? And you left a piece of homework you didn't do. Like, don't just shove that under the carpet, please. And, you know, Andre is very upfront. We talked about this part very quickly. And he said, well, I don't have any Wi-Fi tokens that give you. So there's no like token exchange. So that's it. I don't know what else there is to talk about. Like, okay, dude, like, that's cool. But, you know, along with my DeFi Voltron concept, I opened up a balancer pool. It's just a shared public pool that, to me, it made sense. Like, look, I'm not going to try to guess at which of these entities are going to accrue more value. So therefore, I'm just going to diversify across all of these tokens. And I think very interesting, you know, Ryan from Asari has that Yeti thing that he proposed with PowerPool. I think that's an interesting direction. I think that certainly I am biased to Cream token itself. But at the same time, I think as a general overall thing, I think all of DeFi is going to be better because of this. It's not just the Yearn ecosystem, but specifically within the Yearn ecosystem, I think all of these projects are better off, including Wi-Fi, because the TVL will all go up and you know, we're all going to ensure the additional safety and trust and then liquidity and consolidate that liquidity within. So I do think that TVL across all of these projects will be growing significantly faster once we're past this initial sort of, we'll call it the integration phase of actually, you know, chaining these smart contracts and having the liquidity start flowing. When that spigot opens, I think it's going to be huge.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, I'm really excited for the products that come out of all these partnerships and the speed to deployment. And I think it brings DeFi to a new level. I do think coming from an investment background, it totally flips the IB model on its head. I mean, there's no roadshows, there's no token exchange, there's no buyout. It's wild. It's just a merge code.
Yeah, no banker, no lawyers. And
I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
I have a lot of banker lawyer friends. They're good people, I'm sure. They're the best.
Me too. They don't sleep much either. But I love that we're having, you know, quasi mergers in DeFi. I think it's insane. But you know, Leo, this has been incredible, man. We have a couple minutes left, so we might as well turn the table a little bit. How's where you're at right now? You said, where did you say you're at right now?
Taipei. Yeah.
Is it all open? Or is it?
Yeah. I mean, there's like the people are so, okay. Once in a while I go dine here. Well, actually I eat out every day. And when I'm at Smith and Walensky, they have this in Taipei, they have this like jazz combo, and I go there and I eat steaks and I listen to the jazz for happy hour and I'm having my, you know, drinks or whatever. And I look around and I think, I in Taiwan am getting more of the American, you know, lifestyle, I guess, eating steaks, listening to jazz, no mask, and everybody's safe. It's like, wait a minute, why am I living the American dream here in Taipei? Apparently,
that's just amazing.
You know, going to Ultra was great. Like that was amazing.
I was jealous that you were there, man. I'm a huge EDM fan. You're in our group. I was so jealous.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I've not said this anywhere in the Wi-Fi community, but like, why Tokyo? It should be Taipei. Like, this is where it is.
It's hey, you know what? You're in the chat, man. You might as well drop it in.
I should.
Leo, it's been incredible having you on, man. Long time coming. Huge fan of your drive and your passion, and I can't wait to have you on again soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.